Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Rurik by Lauren Smith, narrated by Lucy Rivers.
Prologue. Great heroes need great sorrows and burdens, or half their greatness goes unnoticed. It is all part of the fairy tale. Peter S. Beagle, The Last Unicorn. Moscow, Russia. Rurik Baranov watched the men and women dance in his nightclub, Logovo, the lair. Its dark interior was lit by flashing strobe lights and fog from the machines at the opposite ends of the dance floor. The entire club looked like a cross between a cave and a dungeon. The walls were rough stone, and dancers were showing off their moves in iron-barred cages. While Rurik's older brother ran a sensible business, one that was built on technology and commerce, Rurik traded in something far older. Pleasure. Dancing, drinking, and sex never went out of style. He was not buttoned up and proper like Grigori. He enjoyed wild nights with wicked women, bodies straining and yearning for that headlong rush of mutual satisfaction. It never ceased to amaze him that Grigori had walked away from such things. But he'd heard that after 1,000 years a dragon tended to lose his wildness, at least in part. Only when they found their mate did they experience a resurgence of that frenzied lust. Rurik chuckled. He could not picture Grigori doing anything with a frenzy except slaughtering the competition in a boardroom. He was damned good at that. Scary as fuck, too. Always cool and controlled. Yet when Rurik had shown interest in the little mortal professor, Madeline Haynes, Grigori's eyes had blazed and he growled a dark and dangerous warning. It was the first time he'd ever been afraid of his own brother. Dragons were possessive by nature, and as Russian imperial shifters, they were more covetous than others when it came to jewels and women. Thinking about jewels reminded Rurik of his other brother, Mikhail, the brother who was lost to them. He'd failed to secure a hoard of jewels from a treaty they'd made with English dragons, and had been exiled for his failure by their father. For one brief year, when their father and mother had traveled the world, Grigori had called Mikhail home. For 4 seasons, Mikhail had been part of the family again. That had been 2 centuries ago. He wished Mikhail were here now. Mikhail knew Grigori better in some ways, even though he hadn't been home since the 19th century. Mikhail would have known how to warn Grigori against the temptations mortal females presented. Rurik? A sweet voice caught his attention and dragged him out of his ancient thoughts. A beautiful French woman, with dark hair and green eyes, watched him from across the bar. His best bartender, Nikita, wore a silver sequined dress and killer black heels that made every man in the room assume she was a customer and not the bartender. Whenever he looked at her, the hardness in his heart always softened. But she was human, and he could never be with a human. Not for long.
"How are the numbers tonight?"
he asked as he joined her, leaning on the bar toward her. He couldn't help it. She pulled him in like the glint of a diamond just within reach. It made him practice his self-restraint. She smiled warmly, a smile meant only for him, and he knew why. She was in love with him, but she was too much like him, a free spirit, unchained even by the forces of love. Any other woman he would have slept with and moved on, but he couldn't do that with Nikita. She had the potential to be a true mate. If he even dared to kiss her, it could destroy his family. Battle dragons couldn't risk love. Their lives were dangerous. If they dared to mate a human, that human could be used against them. A fragile mortal life was easy to snuff out, and that would kill the dragon, because mated dragons always died, shortly after their maids.
Good. We are at maximum capacity, but...
Her voice trailed off, and her eyes widened as she stared at something over his shoulder.
Nikki,
he queried. Her green eyes cut to his and she whispered one word.
Dracur.
He spun, instincts kicking in. Ruslan Dracur stood only a few feet away, grinning like the devil he was. As the eldest son of Dmitri Dracur, the head of the Dracur family, Ruslan was an arrogant bastard who believed he didn't have to abide by the terms of the treaty between the Baranov and Dracur families.
Ruslan, what the fuck do you want?
Rorik made a grand show of leaning casually against the bar, even though every muscle in his body was tense. He prayed that Ruslan wouldn't be so stupid as to attack him in a club full of humans. The Dracur family ran the eastern half of Russia, while the Baranovs controlled the west. The Yenisei River acted as the formal boundary between their territories because it split Russia almost cleanly in half. The Baranovs had control of both Moscow and St. Petersburg, and under Rurik's father in 1750, they had made a treaty that allowed the Dracurs to enter and leave those two cities without incident, so long as they did not interfere with Baranov business or cause trouble. This protected both of their families. Conflict between supernatural houses tended to attract the wrong kind of attention, such as the Brotherhood of the Blood Moon.
I've come for a drink and women,
Ruslan laughed, but there was a feral gleam in his eyes. Rurik remained still, the picture of casual ease. They both knew that Rurik could knock Ruslan on his ass without breaking a sweat.
Good for you, Ruslan, but find another club, not mine.
Had they been outside the city, Rurik would have attacked, but the damned treaty kept him on his best behavior. Ruslan brushed his dark hair out of his eyes and walked to the other end of the bar. His expression changed to one of hunger as he spied Nikita.
You, female, bring me the best vodka in the house.
He slapped his palm on the counter hard enough that the expensive glass layer over the wood fractured, tiny cracks fanning out around his hand like spider webs.
Son of a dog, Rorik
growled softly. The dragon inside him stirring. He could feel the tattoo moving on his back. He'd never been very good at restraining the beast within him, even at the best of times. His father had said it was because he was built for battle.
Ruslan, leave now, he warned.
The other man made a show of getting comfortable. Then he looked over at Nikita and licked his lips.
That was it. Nikita, the alarm, if you please.
Rurik tried to stay calm, but he could feel the dragon surging to the surface. His bartender ducked beneath the bar and slapped a red button. An alarm blared, cutting the music off. Dancers scrambled out of the cages and off the dance floors, rushing toward the exits in varying degrees of panic. It was a shame to lose a good night of business, but better to have an empty club than risk human casualties. There was nothing like a spike in mortality rates to draw the Brotherhood into their business. They had no offices in Moscow that he knew of, but there were always agents about, and they could mobilize from St. Petersburg in short order. The last thing either he or the Dracur family needed were supernatural hunters swarming the city.
Such hostility, Ruslan said. I was just here to talk business. I like your bar. I was thinking about buying it. How about 1 ruble?
Rorik growled.
One last chance, Ruslan. Walk away and I leave your pretty face intact.
The other man laughed.
I was about to tell you the same thing.
Rorik sensed Nikita close behind him. Not everyone had left when the alarm went off.
Nikita, get out of here.
But go! He roared, his voice dropping to a low pitch as his vocal cords started to transform. Nikita tried to flee, but Ruslan threw up a hand. Fire shot out of his palm, and a blazing beam cut off her escape. Ruslan's eyes morphed into red irises with slitted pupils. A hint of smoke puffed from his nostrils. Both men were fighting to stay in control and not fully transform. The club wouldn't be able to fit one full-grown dragon, let alone two.
You would break your father's treaty, Rorik bellowed,
raising his own palm, unleashing a spray of fiery sparks. It was the closest thing to a warning shot he could manage, without starting a fire in his club.
I am not bound by his word.
Ruslan balled his other fist and slammed it down on the bar. The glass counter shattered into thousands of pieces, and the wood beneath exploded in a burst of massive splinters. A 6-inch piece of wood buried itself in Rorik's lower belly.
Fuck.
Pain set in like a dull ache, and he knew it was bad.
Rorik!
Nikita screamed and ran toward him. He gripped the shard and ripped it out. Hot blood streamed down his shirt, and his belly throbbed. He would heal fine, the wound was already clotting, but the sight of it must have scared her. When Nikita reached him, he waved her away.
You have to get out,
he panted.
I can't fight him and worry about you.
She bit her lip and nodded.
Be safe,
she said. She kissed his forehead and fled, but she never reached the door. Ruslan raised his hand and aimed a jet of fire at Nikita. She was knocked into the wall against a massive mirror just feet from the exit. The mirror shattered, and her limp body fell to the ground. Blood dripped from Nikita's lips, and the light in her green eyes faded like the light of a dying star. Something inside Rorik broke, a piece of his heart. A cold, harsh laugh escaped Ruslan's lips.
What's one more human, more or less?
Shock and grief raged inside Rorik. His Nikita, his Nikki, was gone. A red mist descended over his vision. He didn't care about the club, the treaty, or the Brotherhood right now. He cared only for vengeance. With a deafening roar, Rurik's clothes shredded as his body transformed into a 15-foot-tall black-scaled dragon. His frill fanned out around his neck as he opened his jaws and a stream of fire shot out, so hot it was nearly blue. Ruslan tried to change into his own beast, but Rorik's jaws caught Ruslan's elongated neck mid-change and snapped shut. The heavy crack echoed in the room as Ruslan went limp beneath him. The battle was over before it even began. Rorik released him, and the body changed back to a man, lying broken and bleeding at Rorik's feet. Rorik's eyes darted around the room, seeking out more threats. And then he saw Nikita's body. The beast recognized the loss of a woman he cared about, and he let out a mournful sound. Rorik let go of the dragon side of him, and his body shrank back to its mortal shell. Rorik fell to his knees. Nikita was dead. Ruslan was dead, and a 3-century-old treaty had been broken. He dug his hands into his hair, trying to stop them from shaking as emotions rolled through him like violent riptides. How was he going to tell Grigori that he had killed Dmitri Dracor's eldest son?
I've just started a war.
1. Among all the kinds of serpents, there is none comparable to the dragon. Edward Topsell, 1658. Moscow, Russia, 3 months later. Charlotte McQueen tugged the sweetheart neckline of her red satin cocktail dress up a few more centimeters. Despite the thick red velvet winter coat she wore, her exposed skin had drawn the cab driver's eyes and made her shift restlessly until he'd had to focus back on the road. But then, she'd known her dress would have this effect. She was practically falling out of the damn thing. But she had a hunch this would be one of the few times having full breasts would be an advantage instead of a hindrance. She'd spent most of her life hiding her curvy figure behind draping sweaters and lab coats. It was silly, but she'd never felt comfortable in sexy clothes. Charlotte wasn't sure if it was how the slide of satin felt on her skin, or the way every masculine eye fixed on the thigh-high cut of her dress or the lowered neckline. But tonight, she was trying hard to ignore how exposed she felt. She couldn't be distracted, because she was pulling a Mata Hari. She was going behind enemy lines, or rather, into dragon territory, to seduce a seriously dangerous dragon shifter. How the hell did I get here? It wasn't the first time she'd asked herself that question. Before tonight, the idea of chasing down a man who could shift into a dragon was ludicrous. Not because she didn't think they were real. She'd grown up her entire life knowing the truth about things that went bump in the night. Vampires, dragons, werewolves, shifters, all of it. Until now, she'd been kept safe by her overprotective older brothers. But she was done with that. She wanted to do something meaningful with her life. And tonight, that meant quite literally walking into the dragon's den. If my brothers figure out I'm here, they'll probably try to send me to some convent like it's the Middle Ages. The thought almost made Charlotte smile, despite the dangerous situation. Her brothers, Damien and Jason, were the experts at this sort of thing. Well, not the seduction part, but the infiltration. They would know exactly how to handle something like a dragon shifter. But she'd never been a part of their secret, supernatural hunter lifestyle. Until tonight. If I bag this guy, they'll have to admit I'm not just their kid sister anymore. Maybe then they'll let me join the Brotherhood. But if she were being honest with herself, coming all the way to Moscow hadn't just been about proving her brothers wrong. It began when she saw the man from the file she'd gotten from the Brotherhood's headquarters. The man she couldn't get out of her head. The man she planned to capture. Her target was Rorik Baranov, youngest of the three remaining dragons in the Russian imperial bloodline who controlled the western half of Russia. Pulling out her cell phone, she scanned the picture she had of him, probably for the 100th time. She'd been lucky enough to snap some shots of the surveillance photos they had of him on file. He was gorgeous, in a dangerous sort of way, with a strong jaw, bright green eyes, and wavy dark hair that was a little too long, making him look a bit like a pirate from those swoon-worthy romance novels she'd devoured as a teenager. Charlotte hadn't known men could look like that in real life, and she'd already had some seriously dirty thoughts about what he would be like in bed. He'd been her first choice out of the three brothers to try to capture, but that wasn't because of his looks. Rorik tended to wear leather jackets, jeans, and biker boots, and there was a long scar down one side of his face, which only made him look that much more dangerous. Her sexy biker dragon was too much of everything, and she had to admit, getting close to him tonight was going to be a heck of a thrill. God, there has to be something wrong with me. He's not my sexy biker, he's my target. But she couldn't deny the fact that the idea of getting up close and personal with Rorik turned her on. Keep your cool and focus on the mission. It was the 10th time she had to remind herself of that. Tonight was strictly recon, though. She needed to get into Rorik's club survey the scene, locate, and observe him. Nothing more. She'd read the notes on the Brotherhood's dragon monitoring. These days, they really just tried to keep an eye on the dragon's activities and not interfere. But a few months ago, two dragons had fought in a nightclub and a woman had died. This sparked rumors of a coming dragon war between two families in Moscow, possibly drawing in support from other countries. It could easily spiral out of control, and the Brotherhood were desperate to figure out how to stop it before it happened. And it all came down to Rorik. He'd been the dragon at the nightclub who'd survived. Her brother Damien had made a note in the file that Rorik might be the key to all this. If they could question him, they could determine how serious the situation really was, and whether or not they would have to intervene. So far, no one had been able to get close to Rorik. Direct contact was useless. Shifters didn't trust the Brotherhood and always closed ranks the moment they appeared. They'd tried incognito female agents. It seemed logical, given his background and reputation. But he never let any of them get close enough to lure him to a secure location. He always seemed to sniff them out somehow. And bringing him in by force would only justify the distrust shifters had, and make it even harder to get answers. That's why I'm here alone. Rorik won't see me coming. She grinned a little. She wore a light perfume she'd concocted that contained a bit of enhanced pheromones, a side project she'd been working on. If it worked, she would catch his interest and then go with him, rather than try to lure him somewhere with her. That had been the tip-off, she assumed. The moment the female agents had tried to get Rorik someplace he wasn't familiar with, the warning flags went up. But Charlotte had a better way in mind. Once she had him alone, in a place he felt comfortable, she'd use her secret weapon on him, a drug that could incapacitate him long enough to call in the Brotherhood to help her transport him to a secure facility where he could be questioned safely without anyone getting hurt. The cab driver hit the brakes as a car ahead of them swerved into their lane. Charlotte winced as she jerked forward and collided with the cab's back seat.
Sorry,
the driver muttered in heavily accented English. Then he flashed an obscene gesture at the driver ahead of them. At this rate, it would take them forever to reach the club where Rorik was supposed to be. Charlotte slid back in her seat and tried to still her jittery nerves. She would have been back in her little lab in Detroit, safe and sound, instead of here dragon hunting, if it hadn't been for her friend Meg. Meg Stratford, a hunter for the Brotherhood, had secretly called on her to analyze a serum Meg had found in London, a drug that could subdue a dragon's shifting abilities. Charlotte had unraveled the chemical composition in a matter of days. The product she'd synthesized essentially made them human for a period of time, depending on the dose. She'd made samples that would last around 24 hours on an average-sized shifter. But the drug was potentially dangerous, not in terms of directly harming the shifters, but because of how easily it could be misused. In the wrong hands, it would threaten the balance that existed between the various supernatural factions. Even certain members of the Brotherhood, known for their overzealous nature, couldn't be trusted with it. As a result, Meg had sworn her to secrecy, even from her own brothers. A stab of guilt cut through Charlotte. She told Meg she needed more information on dragons to help her solve the mystery of the serum. But that hadn't been true. The real reason she needed to know about dragons was because she planned to prove she was a worthy hunter just like her brothers. She'd created a batch of the dragon-dampening serum for herself, and she had the vials tucked away safely in her hotel mini-fridge. She went over the list of what she knew about dragons in her head as the taxi drove toward Rurik's nightclub, The Lair. 1. Dragons could grow old, like thousands of years, but for most of their lives they resembled men and women in their mid-30s. 2. There were more than a dozen breeds, such as Russian Imperials and Nordic Ice Dragons, Rivalries were common between many of them. 3. Dragons could breathe fire as well as control it. 4. They had protective thick hides with scales. Those scales were often used in magical spells. 5. Dragons could shift between human and dragon forms in seconds. 6. They were obsessed with jewels. 7. For some reason, they were sensitive to pure iron. It could both injure them and bind them. While they could be wounded by normal weapons, they healed fast, and only iron weapons could do lasting damage. Charlotte studied the Moscow nightlife nervously as the taxicab came to a stop in front of the nightclub. Being out of America for the first time in her life, she definitely wasn't used to the cultural differences. On the flight over, she'd listened to some Russian language lessons on her smartphone, trying to learn some phrases, but it gave her a headache. It didn't help that Russian was a notoriously difficult language, requiring a greater range of vocabulary just to reach a basic understanding. Luckily, the majority of the hotel staff and taxi driver spoke English, something she was incredibly grateful for. However, once she stepped into that nightclub, she was positive it was going to be all Russian. The driver had warned her that this was a Russian-only nightclub, not the sort of place for tourists.
"Here is okay?"
the driver asked. "Yes, thank you." She slipped him a few hundred rubles and then got out of the cab. There were several men lingering at the entrance of the club, one of whom whistled when he caught sight of her. She clutched her cell, which contained an emergency number for the Brotherhood office in St. Petersburg, hoping she wouldn't have to use it. If things went poorly, she'd have to face her brothers and listen to them tell her, "I told you so," about staying in Michigan, where life was safe, but boring. "Please don't let this be a bad idea." One of the men by the door said something to her in Russian, but she didn't understand him. She smiled, but kept her head down as she brushed past them. One of the men slapped her ass as she walked by. She tensed and almost tripped. "Just stay cool," her inner voice warned her. She might not be a hunter like her brothers, but she'd taken enough self-defense classes to know how to take care of herself. If this guy wasn't careful, she'd kick him in the balls so hard they'd snap up into his cheeks. But she couldn't afford to make a scene. She needed to stay calm and not call attention to herself. Ignoring the harsh laughter of the men outside, she slipped into the dark club interior. The energetic dance music enveloped her, and the bass pounded so hard against the walls that she could feel them shake as she skirted the club's interior. It took a moment for her eyes to adjust, even with the flashing white lights and pulsing strobes. Fog filled the bottom of the club, hiding a clear view of the dance floor. Everywhere, people were dancing, drinking, and laughing. It was a hedonistic gathering, where pleasures ruled the night. Charlotte clutched her slender purse and headed for the bar. A dark-haired man with an intricate neck tattoo of a wolf howling was flipping bottles and pouring drinks. He took one look at her and retrieved a large rounded glass, then poured a dark red wine in it. He slid it across the slick wood surface of the bar to her. He chuckled when she caught the glass, which glided smoothly into her waiting hand. Then she took a sip. Wow! The red was soft and dark, with a hint of oak and cherry? Yes, that was it. She smiled at the man, who gave a roguish wink, before he turned to see to his other customers. A bartender who guessed your style of drink. That was certainly interesting. A guy like that would rake in tips in America. She studied his wolf tattoo more closely. Was he a shifter? Meg had told her all sorts of things about shifters over the years, Tribal tattoos were pretty popular among the wolf clans. But what were the odds that a wolf ship...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?